Traditional peoples, ancient peoples, have always understood the lunar eclipse is a risky time. It's an edgy time. And I've noticed that this turns up in the dream content too. Dreams of people whose fingers have been cut off trying to reassemble their hands, dreams of haunted houses, dreams of the dead coming around in ways that you don't like, choppy, restless nights last night. And I'm talking about, you know, several hundred dream reports I've been looking at just now, which say that, you know, in the dreaming, the people that, you know, talk to me are reflecting a sort of psychic unease around this time for which there are both scientific and traditional reasons. The traditional reason is that we are just before the solstice, you know, aware that we're all entering a very dark time of the year. You know, the days are getting short for ancient people. 3 months of starvation and, you know, edge of survival stuff lies ahead. So it's an edgy, chancy time. And we heard your fellow talking about fluid displacement. That may be part of it, too. I mean, it's a risky time. Nonetheless, today, tonight, the day of the solstice happened a few hours ago as we plot it, the moment of the solstice. This is a time for celebration because this is the time when the sun starts coming back in human perception as we see it, of course, and it's a time when the light is returning, so it's a time to be, you know, celebrating and feeling a little bit better than we might have felt during the lunar eclipse.
Well, you are right. I've been having some strange dreams lately, too, and normally I don't do that. What's causing all this?
Well, you know, the lunar eclipse is traditionally seen as a time of psychic peril and psychic intrusion. This goes on in ordinary families in many parts of the world today. For example, in India, an Indian friend of mine was telling me just now, pregnant women are advised in traditional families never to look at a lunar eclipse because they are prone at that moment to bad things coming through on the psychic plane. That's an opinion I've run into in Eastern Europe and in Italy too. The understanding is, you know, one of my Iroquois Indian friend says, when the lunar eclipse is taking place, you know, that's the night when the wolf eats the moon. You want to be very careful. It's a risky time. The night sun is extinguished and you've got to watch out for yourself. This, as I say, has always, you know, in our human history on the planet, before we had artificial lighting, been a time when we're going into a very dark period, quite literally. We don't have a lot of sunlight. You know, getting food, getting the means of survival is traditionally difficult during the winter. So it's a time when you're on edge and you're hoping for the best. So what you do in a traditional culture is you light fires, you make light, you have celebrations, you make a lot of noise. You try to get the sun to come back. You try to get the moon to come back if there's been a lunar eclipse. And out of that, all of course, we get the great festival of Christmas.
Does the fact that there's a full moon out there or a new moon, does that have any effect on our dreaming in terms of something physical?
I think it does. When I was listening to the guy talking about fluid displacement, I was thinking, you know, most of our bodies, yours and mine and every other human body, most of our bodies are composed of water. You know, we're mostly aqua. So since we know that the moon influences water, obviously phases of the moon and changes in the moon are going to have some impact physically, scientifically, on our bodily constitution. And this is going to play out in our dream life, our feelings and our emotions as well.
Robert, did the ancients understand dreams better than we do?
They did more with them. I mean, you know, whether I'm going to jump out and say they understood them better in terms of theory, I'm going to be cautious about that. But they did more with dreams. Most human cultures cross-culturally, and you've seen my book, The Secret History of Dreaming, which is all about this. Most human cultures, for most of our odyssey on this planet, have valued dreams and dreamers highly for these simple reasons, George. I mean, first of all, most human cultures have believed that in dreams we see the future. We see things that will happen, which is precognition. We see things that may or may not happen relating to possible futures, and that such dreams give us the ability, maybe, to take action to change the future for the better if we can read the dream aright and take appropriate action. They've also understood that dreams are a way that we get in touch with something bigger than ourselves, whether we call it God or the gods or the bigger self or the moreness of life. Dreams are all the ancestors. Dreams are a way of getting in touch with something more than the ordinary wakeful ego can understand. And thirdly, as a reason for valuing dreams and dreaming, most cultures have understood and respected the fact that dreams are medicine in a few senses. I mean, dreams are diagnostic. They show us things that are going on in the body, often long before physical symptoms present themselves, giving us an option, if we read those dreams correctly, to do better with our bodies and our health. And they give us imageries for self-healing when we do get sick.
If you can understand your dreams, you can do remarkable things with your own life, can't you?
You can. I mean, I'm, you know, Mark Twain said, I don't want to hear about the moon from someone who hasn't been there. So let me just say very briefly that I could not be talking to you on the show, to my certain knowledge, if my life had not been saved three times from probable death on the road by dreams that warned me about situations I was able to avoid by reading the dreams carefully and taking evasive action. I mean, that's an example of how dreaming may be part of our human survival system, part of our intuition kit, which comes fully alive when we let down our left brain inhibitions and just do it. So that's one of the functions of dreaming. It's one of the ways we can do better. Dreams rehearse us for all sorts of challenges and opportunities. You know, George, one of the functions of dreaming is that dreams hold up a mirror to our waking actions and attitudes. They show us how we look, you know, from an objective perspective. It can be humiliating. It can be embarrassing. It can be like looking in a funhouse mirror and seeing all your flaws magnified. But my goodness, sometimes dreams give us a good, hard, cold look at how we are and where we're going, from which we can learn and do better.
Why do some people not remember their dreams, Robert?
Well, it's a function of habit. For the most part, we're not in the habit of remembering dreams, making time for them. Typically, we're rattled out of sleep by the alarm clock or the family or the bustle of the day. We head out the door after the shower and the coffee and don't make time to catch anything from the night. So habit is reason number one. Fear is reason number two. Sometimes we are worried that there's something going on in the dream we would rather not know about, whether that's a dark side of ourselves we'd rather not think about, or a possible problem in the marriage or the job or the environment we'd rather not think about. So we say it's only a dream, and we blow it off and say goodbye to it. And that is a very foolish strategy, because if something is troubling you in your dreams and you're kissing it goodbye and not paying attention, what is likely to happen is that the issue reflected in that kind of dream will come around and grab you in waking life in a way that you would rather not have happen.
What's new with you during this holiday season, Robert?
Well, I've been thinking a lot about the things we've just been talking about. I mean, I'm a very traditional guy in some ways. I mean, I feel sometimes that all of what's gone before me moves in my dreams and my psychic life. I've been thinking about this lunar eclipse. I've been thinking about the solstice. I just finished a new book called Active Dreaming, which is my preferred name for my process, which will be out in the spring. Love to talk to you about that when the time comes.
Sure.
I'm running around the world teaching my stuff. My books on dreaming are now in 22 languages, and people want me. So I'm teaching in places from, you know, Estonia to San Francisco and having a very good time with all of that.